On my new podcast, On Par with Maury Povich, we're getting down to the truth behind the names that you know and love. Unfiltered conversations with legends like Leanne Morgan, Kathy Griffin, Ricky Lake. Find out when they feel the most on par. We're breaking it down with Don Lemon, Aaron Parnas, Lamonte Jones, laughing it up with Josh Johnson, Dan Soder, many more. You know, the results are in. Great conversations are always on par. So follow and listen to On Par wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back inside the clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. David Hoff, Bruce Levine, until 11:30 this morning, building a bridge to the NFL triple header right here on The Score, beginning with Colts Vikings at 11:30. But it's time now to talk White Sox some more and go out to our guest hotline presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. And that is where we find the Chicago White Sox's special assistant to the general manager, the winner of the 2022 International Scout of the Year, Marco Patti. Thank you for joining us this morning, and congratulations.
Thank you very much, guys. Appreciate having me on your show. Good morning.
Great to have you. And let's begin with just that honor, which you were awarded with earlier this month at the winter meetings. To you, what did it represent? You have been with the White Sox a long time, but I believe that, you know, when they bring the kind of public attention, it reminds people just how much good work is being done behind the scenes, Marco, not somebody who's out in the forefront a lot. But what did that mean to you to get honored in that way?
Oh, well, thank you for the question. Yeah, I immediately brought me home to my upbringing with my parents and the way they, taught us, all five of us, kids at home, the significance of an opportunity, how to respect an opportunity and how to value an opportunity. So it all started with the Braves when they first gave me an opportunity to be a minor league player and then enter the scouting world, the years that I spent there and moving on to Toronto and obviously now with the White Sox. It makes me feel good, humble, honored, to know that, you know, I took advantage of these opportunities in the right way and did what was expected of me as part of an organization. And I'm glad that, I was able to celebrate that night, the work that we've been doing for quite some time now.
Oscar, congratulations from me as well. And I'm wondering, the White Sox are looking for Oscar Colas to make a impact on the major league team this year. This was one of your major signings over the last few years. Tell us a little bit about where Oscar Colas is at and how he fits in with the 2023 Chicago White Sox.
Well, you know, Oscar, you know, when we signed him, the years that we've been watching him perform in international competitions, once we signed him, we knew that we were getting a player that had some tools that were above average and lots of ability to play the game. Obviously, he took charge once he started his minor league career this year with us and performed at every level that he played in. I think that the timely manner in which he was promoted from level to level was impeccable. Obviously, he performed at each level and did the necessary work. Right now, he's in the right state of mind. He's working hard, trying to get prepared. But at the end of the day, Oscar is going to he's going to have to take the responsibility and go out for the job himself. I think that the organization obviously is giving him the opportunity, and he's going to have to do the work to convince everybody that he's ready to perform at that level. Do we feel comfortable and very sure that he's got the ability to do it? Now he's got the keys, so he's going to have to perform during spring training and show that he's prepared for that level.
Talking with Marco Patti, the White Sox special assistant to the general manager, winner of the 2022 International Scout of the Year here on Inside the Clubhouse with David Hall and Bruce Levine till 11:30. Marco, when you look at Oscar Colas, now you have been involved with other players signed who whose impact was immediate, Jose Abreu, Luis Robert, and you look at the way that Oscar has prepared for this moment in spring training, mentally, physically. If he is, let's say, hypothetically, the opening day starter in right field, if he does get an opportunity early on in the season to contribute, how immediate do you expect that impact to be, and what are the keys in him for him to realize that potential sooner rather than later?
Well, you know, he's got impactful tools. He's got tools that can separate him from a lot of guys. And he's got this hard desire. He's focused on trying to be the best possible player that he can be. There's no question about it. His makeup, the way he plays the game, he's very competitive, things of that nature. The toughest part about a player's progression, as much as you are sure about the tools that he has and how well he's done, is that he has to be, like I said, he has to be the one that performs. He has to be the one that give the organization indicators of whether he's ready to handle it, or that he needs a little bit more seasoning. It's up to him. Now, Oscar is the guy that left Cuba at an early age and played in Japan and played minor league baseball in Japan and play at the major league level in Japan. We feel that that experience that he has at that level is going to help him adjust a little quicker, perhaps, in the major leagues than they would normally be for another guy. But at the end of the day, he is the one that's going to determine how soon, how fast, when he's ready to make the jump and how well he handles it. We have all the confidence in the world in the kid as a person, as a player. And all we're doing is, as an organization, is waiting for him to set those indicators. And once those indicators are there, then you know, the people in charge of making that decision will certainly be ready to make that decision. I don't think any organization in baseball that has a player with his ability wants the guy to spend another year in the minor leagues, but the player has to show you that he's ready to make that jump. So far, so good. We're all happy about it. I'm extremely happy about it. I know that Kenny, Rick, and Jerry are happy about it, and everybody that's worked with him in the minor leagues are happy about it, but he's going to have to be the one that makes that wheel turn. And we're hoping that he's ready for it, and I feel very comfortable that he's got the ability to do it.
We are pleased to have Marco Patti, one of the top scouts in baseball, join us on Inside the Clubhouse. He works for the Chicago White Sox. And, Marco, it's not just international players that you've signed. You were instrumental in the signing of the White Sox number one prospect right now, Colson Montgomery, a young shortstop who had a terrific season last year in the minor leagues. Tell us where Montgomery's game is at right now, and how quickly do you think he can be projected to the major leagues?
Well, the work that Mike Shirley and his scouts did with Colson Montgomery was amazing. I think Mike Shirley knows him better than anybody else, and I was just fortunate to have an opportunity to see him and just at the end of the day, the credit goes to those guys who did all the work. You know, he's polished, his solid makeup, and he's got great ability to play the game. I think that, you know, very few guys at that age perform that well that quick. When you see that, when you see a young player coming straight out of high school and doing as well as he has, you certainly feel good about what you're seeing. So all credit to Mike and the scouts and the people that saw him on a day-to-day basis. And, you know, they did the work. And we're proud of the work that they've done with this young man and the other young man that they're signing. So it's a good addition to the organization. It's a good addition to the organization. And, you know, that's the key of what we do. You know, the key of what we do is we provide support, not only the financial support from our leadership, we provide with the moral support when things don't go right, because this is a business where you're going to swing and miss from time to time. We all have done it. But when you have the support of the organization to understand that sometimes you're going to miss on guys, it's important, because our job as international, domestic player development, professional scouting, medical strength and conditioning is to make sure that we provide a constant flow of players to our system so we can create sustainability for our major league club. So I think we all on the same page. We all receive the opportunity and the support from our leadership. And everybody knows who our leadership is. You know, it's Jerry Reinsdorf, Kenny Williams, and Rick Hahn, who are giving us the trust for us to do our part. And we're happy to be able to contribute. And I think that the things that are coming for this organization in the near future are going to be huge, because we are working together to try to build a solid foundation for those guys to have the amount of players that they require to create that sustainability in the big leagues.
Marco, you played a big part in signing Luis Robert to the White Sox organization back in 2017. You have a relationship and insight that we're not privy to. But so I'm asking you this in terms of Luis Robert. Everybody understands he's a five-tool guy. The ceiling is enormous for a player of his caliber and with his talent and skill set. Also, the biggest availability, though, the biggest ability is availability, and he has yet to play more than 100 games in a season for a lot of different reasons. I wonder at what point do you think does he have to take that next step, or are the things getting in his way? Where are we with Luis Robert in terms of expectations and how his health and injury situations have maybe limited his ability to meet those expectations?
Well, all I think all athletes go through a period of time in their career, sometimes at the beginning, sometimes in the middle, sometimes at the end. And we hope that this is just a beginning thing, where just the first few years of his major league career, where perhaps he wasn't used to playing that many games where he came from. And we understand that his minor league career was short simply because he demonstrated the ability to exceed those levels. I think that now, with the couple of years now in the big leagues and having the experience to even play in the playoffs and things of that nature, I think, you know, he's probably ready mentally and physically to for a longer season. So, you know, you really can't put a reason why, because in the case of Luis, he's a hard worker, his body's in great shape, and, you know, he's always preparing for a season. But, you know, those things happen, and you know, let's hope that it's just his first part of his career when he was injured, and now moving on to the rest of his career, he can maintain can stay healthy and provide the potential that he showed us.
Marco Patti, our guest on Inside the Clubhouse, one of the top scouts in baseball, works for the Chicago White Sox. Marco, when you're talking about Cuban players, are they different from any of the other Latin American players as far as what you pointed out? And that is, with a lot of the other Latin American countries, they play more games. In Cuba, they average 90 to 95 games a year. Coming to the United States and playing professional ball, you add on those extra 50, 60 games. It's significant because it's a muscle memory thing, and it's also, you know, ahead of you. I remember Jose Abreu, when he came over, talking about the challenge of playing those extra games and getting his body and mind ready for what is pretty much another third of a season. How does that weigh into you signing Cuban players, and how often does that come up in the conversation?
Oh, I think it's something that we always think about, you know, the adjustment period. So a lot of times, you know, you want to not hold it against the players that are a little bit older, 24, 25, simply because, you know, they have to adjust. It's hard to change your lifestyle like you want to have in Cuba in comparison to the one they have once they get here and then start playing professional baseball. Not only the baseball part of it, but the day-to-day part of it is something that they have to adjust. And, you know, I mean, how well someone adjusts is just goes with the individual. You know, obviously Jose was a little older than Luis when he signed, so it was a lot easier. But in the case of Luis and every Cuban player that we evaluate, the most important factors are the ability and the ability to play the game, where the fact that they have to adjust is maybe a little bit of a negative. The positive side about a Cuban player is that most of those guys are polished to the point where, you know, from the baseball standpoint, they're almost ready. Now, the other part that you have to wait on is the fact that they have to adjust and learn the system. Once again, one of the reasons that I think Oscar has benefited from playing in Japan is that he already got that out of his system. And living in a big city like Japan and the regiment that they have over there, I think is going to help his career here. So, but it's something that we always wait. But at the end of the day, our purpose is to find the best available talent for this organization. And you know, even though we have those factors in mind, it's always the most important factor is their ability to play.
Marco, last thing I have for you is I wonder, as you mentioned Colas and you mentioned Abreu and Luis Robert and so Yoki Cespedes, all these great players and finds that are listed in your resume, and you look at the players that you have scouted over the years that have panned out, is there any one characteristic that ties everything together? The one thing that you may look for in a trait that convinces you that this is a risk worth taking or this is a player worth signing?
Yeah, I think the most important ingredient is to know that you have a good citizen, a good person, someone that, you know, is not going to embarrass the organization, is not going to embarrass himself. And obviously, the ability to play the game, the ability to excel on the field is important. You know, players are all different, you know, whether they're Cubans, Dominicans, or Americans, they're all different. But I think the guy, the person that has the projection to play in the big leagues, somewhere along the line, he's going to show you the discipline that it requires to become a major league player. I think as much as we do as organizations, excuse me, in the development of players, the player has to have the responsibility, the burning desire to go home during the offseason and do what it requires for him to be prepared for the following year. I think that's where players really separate themselves. They separate themselves when they go home, when there's nobody watching them, when there's nobody telling them what to do. And they're the ones that take the initiative to do the work that it requires for them to reach the next level. That's the most important thing.
Marco, David, and I really appreciate your time. We hope that you and your family have a wonderful holiday. Thanks for joining us and making our show better with all the knowledge. And again, congratulations on your award as International Scout of the Year.
Thank you very much, guys. My pleasure.
Marco Patti, the special assistant to the White Sox and the International Scout of the Year for 2022, talking about signing Oscar Colas and Jose Abreu. Really good stuff right there from Marco Patti. And Bruce, we will continue with the very interesting interview subjects with Pat Hughes, the Hall of Fame broadcaster. The Score's very own joins us next on Inside the Clubhouse. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Here we go, Montgomery's pitch. A little bouncer slowly toward Bryant. He will glove it and throw to Rizzo.
It's in time! And the Chicago Cubs win the World Series! The Cubs come pouring out of the dugout, jumping up and down like a bunch of delirious 10-year-olds. The longest drought in the history of American sports is over, and the celebration begins.
Welcome back inside the clubhouse. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. David Haw, Bruce Levine until 11:30 today. And that was the highlight that no Cub fan ever gets tired of hearing. And that is the voice that everybody recognizes. The soundtrack for every baseball fan summer here in Chicago. And we are lucky enough to have him as a colleague here at The Score.
We go out to our guest hotline presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book, and that is where we find the one and only winner of the Ford Frick Award, future Hall of Famer, Pat Hughes. Good morning, Pat. How are you?
David, I'm fine. Bruce, nice to be on with you guys. Every time I hear that highlight, the thought strikes me that when you're broadcasting live and there's no script, you're not reading, you're just speaking extemporaneously, there's no guarantee that the words are going to tumble out in the proper order. No guarantee whatsoever. And thankfully, everything came out okay that night.
You know, it's interesting, Pat, and it's great to have you on as always. And congratulations once again for going into the Hall of Fame as the Ford Frick Award winner in 2022. When people know that there's a great moment ahead, fans always ask me, do you think broadcasters plan? Do they have an idea, a framework of what they want to say if that big moment occurs? You know, you go back and you look at the great calls that you made. And, Kerry Wood, the momentum building up to 20 strikeouts. Sammy Sosa and Mark McGwire chasing Babe Ruth and Roger Maris and going past 61 home runs. And now, you're 2016, you're sitting there, the seventh game of the World Series. The game goes up and back. It looks like a Cub win. It looks like a disaster for the Cubs. It comes back to being a win. But from your perspective, do broadcasters prepare a framework for a great call? Or do you just let it happen?
Well, you know it's coming, Bruce, and it's a great question and a fair question. You don't know exactly how the game is going to end. It could end any number of different ways. A home run, a single, a strikeout, a routine pop-up, a ground ball to short, whatever. It could end. So to try to plan out exactly what you're going to say, I think, is a very slippery slope. I was actually telling myself, because I knew that no matter what the call would be, it would be replayed over and over and over again, thousands and eventually maybe even millions of times. And I have a strong sense of baseball history. I love history, and I wanted it to be good, obviously. So I was nervous, but I tried to be as spontaneous as I could. I was telling myself things like, don't get too excited. Keep your voice under control. You don't want to get hysterical. Speak clearly. Make sure that the words you say are clearly understood. Keep your voice down. Again, I did not want to have my voice cracking, and that would have been disastrous. So there are a lot of things going through it, plus the fact, Bruce and Dave, a lot of people were asking me, hey, what are you going to say if the Cubs win? I heard that question over and over virtually every day. So that was on my mind. I said, I don't know, because I don't know how the game is going to end, and I don't know what kind of a game it's going to be either. That's another important factor. If you plan out something that you think is real clever to say at the end of a game, it might fit perfectly in a cliffhanger. But if it's a 15-1 final score, that same clever saying might be very inappropriate. So I think spontaneity is always the best way to go. Try to be under control, try to be dramatic, don't overdo it. And I always think, personally, I don't ever want it to be about me. It's always about the Cubs and the people listening.
Great advice, Pat. That is terrific advice, especially the last part. And I think that's what's interesting about all that's happened to you in 2022. You know, people get reflective during the holidays, and as you look back at your year, in the summer, you were inducted into the Cubs Hall of Fame. And then last week, you got the call that everybody hoped you would get and brings you baseball immortality. And I just wonder, as you reflect on the past year and have had a couple days now to let everything sink in, a man with your humility, how do you put it all in perspective, and how special has this year been?
Well, it's extremely special, David, and thanks for those kind words. You and Bruce have always both been so nice to me. And it's an emotional thing. You start thinking about your childhood and how you started, when you began loving baseball, and then you get into broadcasting. You start thinking about the early days there, the people that helped you. And I keep thinking about my parents. I wish that they could both be alive to experience this. They were educators. My father, a college professor, my mom, an elementary school teacher. They loved learning, and my dad was a sports nut. He used to take us to Giants games and 49ers games and Warriors games, and he taught at San Jose State, so we saw a lot of San Jose State football and basketball games, and I went to San Jose State. So you start thinking back to your childhood and when you began, and it's very emotional, but you think about all the people that helped you along the way, your first jobs, your first minor league jobs, your first big league jobs, your first Cubs games. Ron Santo, I've thought about him an awful lot lately. Ron Coomer and Zach Zaidman, my current partners. Ron is just one of the best people, not necessarily just in broadcasting. Ron Coomer is one of the best people I've ever met in my entire life. I absolutely love him. Zach is a wonderful third man in the booth. We have fun every day. It's not an easy job. I maybe it is for some other people. It's not for me. I feel like I have to do my homework. I have to be ready to go. I have to keep my head clear. It's always about trying to get Ron Coomer's knowledge of baseball regarding things like techniques of hitting and fielding and base running, although he didn't do all that much base running, but he was an excellent hitter. That's a little joke, Ronnie, if you're listening. But
you know he is.
Try to get What's that?
And you know he is.
I try to get his knowledge on the air. I feel like that's part of the job of the play-by-play man. So I've been thinking about a lot of other people and all the help I've had. And I will say this, too. I think Cub fans, in some cases, they were almost as excited for me to get the Ford C. Frick Award phone call from Cooperstown. They were almost as excited as I was. So I love them for that, and thank you if you're one of those people that I'm talking about.
Pat, the territorial domain of big league baseball broadcasters, it was something that was brought to my attention right away 42 years ago, when I first went into the booth with Jack Brickhouse in his last year of broadcasting. And I realized there was a different aura in there, that it was almost like a house of worship that you walked into, that it was somebody's home. Can you describe the territorial situation in a broadcast booth and what that's like? Because even though I was fortunate enough to do 162 games with you guys in the pregame this year, as I have the last 4 years, it's still, you tread a little lightly when you walk into a broadcaster's booth. What is your thought about the territorial situation with broadcasters?
Very interesting question, Bruce. I don't think anyone has ever put that question to me before, so thank you. I think every booth would probably be a little bit different, and it would depend upon the personalities and the performers and the management of a particular broadcast team. And if it's radio, that's one feeling. If it's television, there will be more people in the booth, like a cameraman, an assistant director, or maybe a stats man. In radio, it's pretty much Ron Coomer and me in the front row, Zach Zaidman and the engineer, Paul Zerang, or Rich Wyatt in almost every case with the Cubs, in the back row. So it's just four of us. And we laugh sometimes. People come into the booth and say, "Where's the rest of the staff? Where do you get all the information?" And, you know, we kind of smile amongst each other and say, "You're looking at them. It's us. I mean, this is all there is." So I don't know. I think what I try to create, and it's not all my call, but it's part of my call, certainly, is to create an atmosphere of fun and of information and professionalism. I like things to be quiet before the game when we are doing our preparation. But I want it to be fun. I want people to be in a good mood. David, you joined us for a broadcast this past year. We loved having you. You made some good points, and I hope you feel like you were part of the team, because you certainly were. Bruce, you're on every single day, a pregame show, and you do a tremendous job, too. You're always prepared. So it's just, I don't know, the atmosphere in the booth, it would differ from team to team. But I like to have fun. I like people to feel comfortable when they're in there with me. And I think that's the atmosphere that creates the best broadcast. That's just my opinion.
Pat, I told the story last Saturday about being with you in 2017 during one of your doctor's visits after you were recovering from having three surgeries in 14 months, recovering from the lesions from dysplasia. And I told the story because I think what it said about you as a person, and I wondered if you could pick it up from the point where after the column that I wrote for the Tribune appeared, it was there forever. It's there on Google. Anyone can find it. Jonathan Brandmeier, Chicago broadcasting legend, was going through something similar that you went through, and he found it. And this was fairly recently. And he reached out after finding it, and he reached out to you to find out more information. And from what I understand from Johnny B., who contacted me after that, you connected him with Aaron Friedman, the doctor who you have been dealing with. And he also just was eternally grateful to you because of, number one, your willingness to help him, and secondly, just the way that you dropped everything to do that because you sensed the need and you understood what he was going through. Johnny B., I don't know if you had a past with him before, Pat, but it seems like you guys are going to be forever connected now.
Absolutely. And David, thank you for writing that column those 4 or 5 years ago. Very helpful. And it did get the word out that there is a way, if you have problems with your voice, possibly to have the problem corrected. Dr. Aaron Friedman is an absolute genius in the area of otolaryngology, and that means voice boxes, basically, and he can repair them. Dysplasia is a precancerous growth that appears on your vocal cords. It creates scratchiness in the voice. Jonathan Brandmeier experienced the same thing that I did. He saw your great column, David. He contacted me, and yes, I was happy to help him. I'd be happy to help anybody, because when you're a broadcaster and there's something wrong with your voice, you feel this wave of fear and paranoia going through you, thinking, my career might be about over. I may not be able to do this much longer. And that's frightening when you're at, you know, at a certain age. Now, as you get older, it's less of a concern. But boy, when you're in your 40s or 50s, you think, I don't want to miss out on the final 20 or 30 years of my career because of this disease. So I did put John in contact with Dr. Aaron Friedman, who now is over in Cincinnati. And I, by the way, I talked to Aaron Friedman this week, and I got good news. I do not need any surgery right now. Cross my fingers and knock on as much wood as possible. I hope I don't need any surgery anytime soon. But Johnny B. went over there. Dr. Friedman worked on him, performed surgery. Johnny B. has been very gracious in thanking me profusely. But Dr. Friedman is just a marvel. And he was trained by a specialist, a voice specialist in Boston, and just a brilliant guy and a great guy. So if you have any problems, I would definitely contact him, especially if you're a broadcaster.
This is the holiday season. There is a website called baseballvoices.com, which Pat Hughes runs. On that website, you will find many different CDs that Pat sells of great Hall of Fame voices of broadcasters from the past that he put together, and also some great scorecards of Pat's that he has put together for him to sign and send to you. Pat, take it away. Nothing better than a Christmas, Hanukkah, or any type of holiday gift than one of your scorecards. Tell us a little about it.
Well, Bruce, you're very kind to bring that up. The CDs you mentioned, I think for Cub fans, the most popular ones have been Harry Carey, Ron Santo, and then the CD we put together after the World Series called The Chicago Cubs Win the World Series. And I serve as the producer, narrator, and writer on all of these productions. And I have learned an awful lot about my business. It has been a labor of love. And yes, there's also a profit motive, if you call it that. But mainly I wanted to learn about my business, and I feel like I've done that. I've got CDs on people like Mel Allen and Red Barber and the great Bob Costas and Marty Brenneman and John Miller and Bob Uecker and Milo Hamilton and Harry Callis and Bob Prince. They're at baseballvoices.com. I will personalize all of these for you. And I think lately, Bruce, the scorecards have been the most popular item. It's my personal scorecard from Game 7 of the World Series. There are also scorecards of the Kerry Wood 20 strikeout game, the scorecard of game 6 of the NLCS when Kyle Hendricks pitched the game of his life and beat the Dodgers to put the Cubs into the World Series. Those are fun. I personalize all of them, and they make a great little gift. They're very affordable. The CDs start at $18. The scorecards, I think, are right around $20. But, again, I will call you if you order two or more to make sure that the personalizations are exactly as you hope and want. And it's available at baseballvoices.com. But I would recommend, if you want them for the holiday, Christmas Eve is a week from today. We will do the best we can to get things out quickly, but the mail service has slowed down a little bit. So please order right away if you'd like it by a week from today.
And you have Hall of Fame on it now. So if you have an older version, HOF can go on that now, right, Pat?
Bruce, I am still getting used to that, but the transition has been rather enjoyable. Let's put it that way. I have been signing my name with the letters HOF for Hall of Fame 2023 down below, and it gives me a thrill every time. And something tells me that that thrill is not going to go away anytime soon.
Pat, thank you so much for your time. Enjoy the holidays with your family. Looking forward to seeing you, hearing you at the Cubs convention next month. And we are so thrilled and appreciative to be your teammate here at the Score. From Mitch Rosen on down, this has just been a privilege. And now that you are in the Hall of Fame, it's great because it's been a long time coming and nobody deserves it more. Thanks for your time this morning.
David, you're very kind. Bruce, great to be with you guys always. Happy holidays to you guys.
Pat Hughes, the Hall of Fame broadcaster, voice of the Cubs, and colleague here at 670 The Score. Bruce, a lot to get into still when we come back. Cubs, Sox, maybe you want to weigh in. 312-644-6767. You're listening to Inside the Clubhouse at Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
We're back with more Inside the Clubhouse with Bruce Levine and David Haw on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Presented by Bet Rivers Sportsbook.
Don't go anywhere. We're here until 11:30 today, building a bridge to an NFL triple header right here on The Score, beginning with Colts and Vikings at 11:30 at the top of the hour. I will share my thoughts on the Hall of Fame ballot I filled out this week. Voted for a certain White Sox left-hander. We'll get into that, Bruce. Great to hear from Pat Hughes. What a voice, what a friend. And I think when you talk Cubs, as we shift our focus there, I want to ask you a quick question because we don't have a lot of time in this segment, but Eric Hosmer is out there now, Bruce, and there's a lot of some speculation on social media. Cubs fans are wondering, does he fit? 34-year-old, 33-year-old left-handed hitting first baseman, maybe outfielder. What do you think? I look at it as, why would you sign him to block Matt Mervis? You have a left-handed hitting first baseman, but some other people might disagree. Maybe the White Sox? I don't know. What do you think about Eric Hosmer?
Well, I think it would be great for either team. First of all, first and foremost, they talk about Eric Hosmer as a locker room force. They talk about him as a locker room presence. They talk about him as a most important person for those championships in 14 and 15. Obviously, the Royals went to two World Series in a row and won one. The reason he was signed to an 8-year deal by San Diego and A.J. Preller were all these factors, and the fact that he was a terrific ball player, a great first baseman, and an outstanding hitter. The contract wasn't going to be great at the end. He's nearing the end of his career, but there's probably a couple years left in him. And if you want somebody that's going to give you everything he has and be a remarkably important presence in your clubhouse, I think there's no reason not to sign him if you're the Chicago Cubs, because he can bring to you an awful lot for a very little amount of money, since San Diego had to pay this entire contract. And I think it's a win-win. You bring him in, you see what he has left. He's never going to be anything but a positive influence on your team.
But on the other hand, you're blocking your minor league player of the year. You're blocking a guy who comes from the same side of the plate and hopefully hits for power. And I think it's a duplicate part for a team that I'm not quite sure what the Cubs are going to be in 2023 yet, because it remains TBD depending on what they do in free agency. But I don't know how Hosmer does anything but complicate the development of Mervis.
Well, who's your DH?
Fair enough. That could be. Yeah, but
National League Hosmer, has a DH now.
I'm aware. I pay attention, Bruce. I know that. But I still think that when you look at Hosmer, does he have enough pop in his bat to think that he's the regular designated hitter?
It's a great question. It's fair. But what do the Cubs have in the way of left-handed power besides Mervis?
What am I missing here? Eight homers and 380 at bats, 268 average. He's a 1.1 WAR player last year. I don't know.
Tell me about the Cubs' left-handed hitting.
It's a short story. There's not much there. I get it.
I'm just saying, if you have to release him at some point, you know, okay. You know, it's just I just think when you have the quality of an individual who's accomplished what he has in the game and has been there, and you have a young team that's building toward being a contender again, I think it's only a win. There's no way it can hurt you. That's how I look at it. So that's why I'm for it.
I hope that they don't sign Eric Hosmer and expect us to buy that as a big move. I still want them to make that big move.
That's just protection mode. Okay, that's not a big move. That's not something you just say, hey, he's going to be our first baseman, and you know, Mervis is going to break the way in. But I will say that the Cubs will be signing probably a right-handed first baseman, and they've talked to Trey Mancini and his representatives at length, and hopefully something can be done there. There are other teams that are looking at Mancini as well, and he has all those same qualities that Hosmer has.
All right, when we get back, we will talk Hall of Fame ballot and certain White Sox left-hander on it and some of the other decisions that went into filling out this year's Hall of Fame ballot. You're listening to Inside the Clubhouse until 11:30 today. Stay tuned on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Alexei! Yes! 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 History! A perfect game by Mark Burley!
Welcome back inside the clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score, here until 11:30. Vikings and Colts here on The Score, part of an NFL triple header all day long. Bruce Levine, David Haw, that was a highlight courtesy of NBC Sports Chicago. Thank you. Good to hear Hawk talking about Mark Burley. Bruce, why are we playing a Mark Burley highlight? Well, I voted for him on the Hall of Fame ballot this year. He was one of five names that I submitted. The check is in the mail. The ballot is in the mail, as they say. And Mark Burley is a pitcher that, as baseball evolves, so do my opinions about what makes a Hall of Fame pitcher. And I did not vote for Mark Burley in his two previous times on the ballot. But this year felt different because this year, I think I filled out the ballot this week, but I made my mind up last summer watching pitchers go 4 2/3 innings and getting praised for it and wanting to appreciate one of seven pitchers in Major League Baseball that have gone 200 innings, 14 straight seasons. Mark Burley in that group. The other six, they're in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, you know, it's an interesting argument, and I think you put it out there very eloquently. The idea that you're reimagining what Mark Burley was, but David, don't you have to look at the era he pitched in and the reason why you didn't vote for him up until this year? The fact that people aren't hitting those strides any longer, should that really have an impact on whether or not he's a Hall of Fame worthy pitcher or not? In other words,
I think so.
He wasn't on your two previous ballots.
Right.
But he is now because you appreciate him more, because very few people can throw the amount of games and amount of innings and have the consistency that he had.
I think the reason is because I'm acknowledging the fact that it's difficult to appreciate things in real time. And in real time, what Mark Burley accomplished was, well, he was efficient. He was the guy that pitched. And you, if you were a sports writer, you knew you were going to make deadline. And if you were a fan, you were going to have to keep, you're going to be able to keep your dinner reservations. He was efficient. He was consistent. And he was dependable. And I think that he's one of those things in life where you don't appreciate at the time, but as time passes, his stature is enhanced. And I think that's totally right. Natural. I'm not trying to cop out for why he didn't vote for him before, but I think as the game continues to change and evolve, Bruce, his numbers, I'm anticipating, will look more impressive. So that is why I'm shifting now rather than later, because I think eventually people will come to look at him in a different way.
Well, numbers are interesting, but, you know, if, let's say you're David Haugh and you never saw him pitch a game and you saw his numbers, you might be inclined 3 or 4 years from now to say, hey, he won 214 games. Hey, he made all his starts 16 years in a row. Hey, he was a five-time All-Star, four-time Gold Glover. Hey, he was Mr. Consistency. But part of the criteria for the Hall of Fame, as it's laid out to us, the voters, is was he a dominant player during his era when he pitched? And, you know, for Mark, what's going to keep him out and what has kept him out is the fact that he was only in the top eight or nine of Cy Young award-winning votes one time in his career. He was Mr. Consistency, but he wasn't Mr. Dominance. And to be in the Hall of Fame, you have to be dominant. You never won a Cy Young Award. You know, never, you know, was in a situation where he was looked at as the best pitcher in the game. He was just the guy that went to work every day and did a good job. Okay, so people like you and I have to decide, is that good job better now than it was while he was doing it? And I'm still contemplating all of that. You know, I do look at the numbers and I do say, wow, here's a guy, you know, we'll never see 200 innings again times all these years in a row. Do I acknowledge that as something great or something very good? And do I miss my road when I'm on the Hall of Fame track of voting?
I think greatness can be found often in longevity, and sometimes it's taken for granted that the greatest ability in professional sports really is availability. And Mark Burley took the ball every fifth day. And so when you look at what he was able to accomplish in going 15 seasons of having double-digit victories, no, he didn't finish in the top five more than once in Cy Young Award voting, but he was consistent to the point where he won 214 games back when victories mattered. He had five All-Star appearances and four Gold Gloves, so he fielded his position well. And he recorded more outs, and pitchers are there to get outs. He recorded more outs than any pitcher in Major League Baseball from 2001 through 2015. So, Bruce, no, he's not Warren Spahn. No, he's not Greg Maddux. But he is, to me, somebody who deserves baseball immortality for things that will age well, characteristics that make him different and set him apart.
Yeah, I'm not there yet on Mark Burley. And again, I can't think of a player that I admired or liked better than Mark Burley, or someone who was so good to the fans and the media. He's one of my favorite people that I've ever covered. But I don't think that should color my opinion as to whether to vote for him or not. And I'm not there yet because he wasn't a dominant pitcher in his era, and because of the fact that he was a very good pitcher. And the Hall of Fame is not about the very good. The Hall of Fame is about the great. And I think that's my responsibility, is to be able to decide between the two. I believe on the two votes that I'm so far that I'm making on my Hall of Fame ballot, it's Andruw Jones and Billy Wagner. I think both of them were great in what they did. Andruw Jones was the best center fielder I ever saw since Willie Mays, okay? And he was a game changer. Billy Wagner had 400-plus saves and was a dominant pitcher every year that he pitched in the big leagues. Those are my only two choices this year. There are a lot of outstanding players out there. Beltran three or four other people that should get your attention. A-Rod, if you're going to ignore steroids. Manny, if you're going to ignore steroids. I'm not ignoring it this year. So from that perspective, there's a lot of people I'm not voting for, and Mark's one of them. I will say that your argument opens up my mind and my eyes to the fact that baseball has changed and dominance of the past should be looked at in a different way because it's not going to ever be there again.
And just let me add this, because Bruce, you're in the majority. I really expect Mark Burley, who received, 11% of the votes last year, he may not approach 20 this year. I don't know if he'll get to the 75% mark ever, so he may never get in. But I just feel like this was a personal decision, as every ballot is. You make good points. Everyone has good points on both sides of the equation. I also am with you on Billy Wagner, who has a strikeout rate of 11.92 per nine innings, which is first among pitchers with at least 900 innings. I voted for him. Andrew Jones, great choice as well. We agree there. I also added Scott Rolen, and I added Todd Helton this year. And I added Todd Helton because I felt like Fred McGriff opened that door a little bit wider, only because the Veterans Committee, the Contemporary Era Committee, voted in Fred McGriff. And when you look at Todd Helton's accomplishments compared to Fred McGriff's, if one is a Hall of Famer, the other one is too, in my view. But I think other people will argue with that. I was with you with Carlos Beltran, did not vote for him. I think his inclusion and involvement with the Astros sign stealing was too much for me to consider. And the other decisions are steroid era things that I think it's a circular conversation, and it's going to be there every year until they decide to add a wing to the Hall of Fame, which acknowledges the steroid era without necessarily inducting those guys.
I feel like a hypocrite about the Hall of Fame steroid era because there are already guys in there that did steroids. Okay, we know it. How can you say, well, they're in, they were voted in, that people chose to ignore it, and these other guys aren't. So I've been up and back on that. I still don't feel great. Look, Alex Rodriguez is one of the top 10 players, without question, if you just look at the numbers on him. He might be in the top 7 players all time of great players. Because he twice was caught doing steroids and admitted to it, I can't vote for him at this point. Down the road, I might have to, because as these other guys trickle in that did steroids, we know for sure they did, even though we weren't there when they did it. I mean, I still think a Hall of Fame without Clemens and Bonds in it is incomplete, okay? Because they were great players long before they were doing steroids. But as some of my baseball friends say to me, how do you know they didn't do it from the beginning of their career? I can't quantify that.
There's a cloud of suspicion that hovers over all of those kind of guys and always will. And that's where I feel like the Hall can give people some guidance or remove the question, which is an uncomfortable one to address each and every December when we're filling out these ballots, because they could have something in the Hall that acknowledges this part of baseball's history, which you can't ignore, but is impossible to celebrate without reservation. You know what I mean? This is very much what we're talking about. It's kind of you feel a little hypocritical, because during the time Sammy Sosa was hitting 66 home runs, we were there writing and talking about it and celebrating that. So now we're going to reject it because of some suspicions, which I didn't vote for Sammy either. Here's the last thing about this, Bruce. I feel like a lot of voters like myself were looking at that Contemporary Era Committee for a little bit of direction, and they slammed the door shut on those guys. They didn't get any votes. Fred McGriff was a unanimous selection, and none of the guys like Bonds or Clemens got any consideration because 16 people who were part of the game and maybe, you know, guardians of the game, if you will, decided that this was an opportunity to send a strong statement rejecting the premise that these guys belonged in the Hall of Fame.
I like the Veterans Committee, and I don't like the Veterans Committee. I like the idea because people do fall through the cracks, like Fred McGriff, who hit 493 clean home runs, according to people, during an era where people were hitting 600 home runs and hitting 60 a year. Fred hit 35 and drove in 100 every year for like 15 years. So that's what makes him a high-quality player. And maybe Mark Burley, in your conversation, gets a view of the Veterans Committee down the road because of his work being reviewed. You know, it's a great argument. But, you know, I can't vote for Manny Ramirez. I just can't do it. And his numbers say yes, you know. Helton wasn't necessarily attached to steroids, but he played in Colorado half of his games. And his numbers are significantly different in Colorado than they were you know, on the road, like every yep. player who plays in Colorado. So, again, it's an ever-changing thing. I just don't, when people say, well, you can put 10 in and you can vote for 10, I don't think there's 10 guys that warranted for me this year. I'm voting for two, okay? And that's it. You said you're voting for five. I just think that because we have a vote doesn't mean, I think the responsibility is either the guys in your mind are a Hall of Famer or they're not. And just because you can vote for 10, you shouldn't necessarily vote for 10 because it's, you know, available to you.
I think that's a responsible way to look at it. I wouldn't vote for 10 just because I can. I think I voted for 5 because I feel like they've met the qualifications or the standard. And everybody, it is subjective. That's why baseball is great. Then sports are great because of the debate and discussion that comes out of these kinds of honors and the process. Bruce, I want to ask you this. Regardless of where you stand on Burley, and we are on different sides of it right now, how do you think that either attention paid or his career being studied the way that it is now, his worthiness, will affect John Lester's? Because here's another guy, 200 career victories, workhorse, would be rewarded for his dependability. He has more World Series rings and was of more winning. But is that because of his great performances or because he was on better teams? And is that something you factor in as well?
Yeah, I think it's both, okay? And because he played on two iconic teams that won World Championships in Boston and Chicago, I think that does impact people's view of him, and they do have a better look. But what you're saying is, well, maybe his numbers weren't all that much better than Mark Burley's, you know? And maybe they're equal pitchers, you know, if you look just at the raw numbers. I think, you know, postseason and how you perform and how your team performs does impact you. And unfortunately for Burley, he only got that one chance with the White Sox in 2005, performed admirably, starting and also closing a game out. So it's unfair, but I think it does have an impact on people. David, it's been a great show. We have people to thank. First of all, Cesar, thank you very much for producing a great show for us. We also get to thank Marco Patti, the International Scout of the Year, White Sox Scout, joined us, as well as the great Pat Hughes, the Hall of Famer Pat Hughes, joined us as well.
Anytime David? That you can hear Pat Hughes on a Saturday morning is a good Saturday morning. It kind of makes you feel a little bit more calibrated for the rest of the day, doesn't it, Bruce? I mean, just the melodious tones of a Pat Hughes. That was a welcome and fun interview. Yeah, we are definitely grateful he joined us, Marco Patti as well. Bruce, I appreciate you setting these things up and weighing in today. You know, this is a busy day here on The Score. Everyone wants to stay tuned. We've got all day a triple header on the NFL. Colts and Vikings, Ravens and Browns, Dolphins and Bills. Where else can you hear, Bruce, a Saturday coach on a Saturday? The Colts head coach, Jeff Saturday. Wow, nobody else has ever done that before. How about that?
That's good. I like that. People can follow me on Twitter at MLB Bruce Levine and our website, 670score.com. David, I will talk to you soon, right after Christmas. I think we're off next week. We'll be back on the 31st. Have a great week.
Thanks, Bruce. And yes, next week, no Inside the Clubhouse, but you want to tune in anyway because I will be hosting the pregame show for Bears and Bills
right here beginning at 9 o'clock next Saturday morning. Thank you for listening to Inside the Clubhouse. Keep it right here. A triple header on the score, starting with Colts, Vikings, Ravens, Browns, Dolphins, Bills. Keep it right here, and we'll talk to you Monday morning on Mullion Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
I want to tell you about a new podcast from Odyssey called Family Lore. It's about interesting family stories and the truth behind them. It's available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.